Asian Pop Nation on Sin 90.7.
Welcome to Asian Pop Nation, the show where a bunch of Asian people talk about things that are Asian. We started off the show tonight with two songs from K-pop boy groups. Haven't done that in a while. First up, we had Fuego by The New Six, and after that, Gotcha by All Ours. That last song is actually a new debut from January this year that I've been sitting on for quite a while. My name is Tracy. Tonight you'll also be hearing from Ethan, Liz and Lee. The main event tonight is our review of Three Body Problem. This is a new series by the Game of Thrones showrunners that Netflix has just dropped. It's based on a Chinese sci-fi trilogy by Liu Cixin, and it features a bunch of Asian actors, so of course we had to review it. All four of us on the show tonight have watched this series and we have a lot to say about it. After that, we'll also be revisiting another Netflix series, namely the live-action Avatar adaptation. This time we'll be hearing from Liz, who actually enjoyed the series. This is a nice contrast to Leisha, who hated the adaptation and made that very clear in our initial review of the series from 3 weeks ago. And finally, we hear from Ethan about his experience at the ITZY concert, which recently happened in Melbourne last week. So we're going to be playing a lot of K-pop tonight. I hope you're ready for it. Coming up right now is a new one from Changha. You're listening to Asian Pop Nation on Sin, where we've just played three tracks, three B-side tracks in fact, from K-pop artists. These were Changha with I'm Ready, followed by NCT Dream, Carrot Cake, and lastly, Even with K.O. Keep On. In this next segment, the team is going to be discussing the new Netflix series, Three Body Problem. So if that's something you're interested in, keep on listening.
In the last week, I have been binge watching a show called Three Body Problem, which is on Netflix. And it's actually currently number one in TV shows today in Australia. So a lot of people are watching this right now. And other than me, there's Tracy and Ethan and Liz, who is here. Everyone's seen it, so I guess we're just gonna dedicate like two or three segments to this new Netflix series. So this new Netflix series is based on a science fiction trilogy by Liu Cixin called Remembrance of Earth's Past. And it's also popularly known in Chinese as Santi, which is Three Body. So what do you guys think? How many, like, where are we up to?
I am three episodes away from ending it. I've been hard at work finishing the show.
I'm on episode 6. And then Lee has finished watching the series.
I have finished it. I finished it in 2 days.
It's a very engrossing series. I
respect it.
In terms of a high-level synopsis, this is, as Lee mentioned, a sci-fi series. This trilogy of books, which has this story that spans like multiple different like generations and castes of people.
And eras, actually.
Yeah, and eras. That's a good word. Mm-hmm. But I guess all you need to know going into it is that the first episode is based around two timelines. One is 1960s China. It actually starts with this timeline, so during the midst of the Cultural Revolution. And the second timeline is modern day UK, like Oxford University. In it, bruv. Yeah, and it basically is based around young physicists from those eras who you later realize are connected. But yes, that's all I will say as a synopsis. I don't think this is a very synopsible series in general.
Yeah, I think it's better that people go in and watch it blind because a lot of it happens. Like, a lot of it, you kind of want to figure out for yourself because it's...
There's a lot of reveal.
Yeah. It's definitely a reveal where every episode you watch, they kind of peel back more layers about what this kind of story is about. Yeah. And you slowly find out more and more about this. And I think it's best if you experience it that way.
Yeah, definitely. That being said, Ethan, you already knew everything that was about to happen because you've seen the book series.
Yes, I have.
You've read it.
I've seen the book. I saw the books at Dymex. Like, wow.
Yes.
I've read the first two books, which I think is roughly what the TV series covers up to anyway. But yeah, definitely. Netflix doesn't shy away from... I think one of the things that it does well is that Netflix paces the series quite well. So every episode, it has another big reveal. And so you kind of get an idea of what is happening by like the first or second episode. In the books, you don't really find out until like the second half of the first book. So a lot of the first book, like I'd honestly say about 75%, it's just like this mystery of what's happening. And you don't realize what's happening until the end. So when I gave it to my brother to read it, and he hated that book because he was like, what the hell is happening? This is so boring.
Right.
But yeah, like I think because of that, I think people would find the Netflix series a lot easier to follow because it paces a bit better. Yeah.
And Lee, what did you know about this series before you watched it?
I knew absolutely nothing. I think I was just browsing YouTube and I saw the trailer for it on my recommended. And then I clicked on it. It was like, oh, super cryptic, like mystery. What's going on? Oh, sci-fi. Wow, this is amazing. And then it was like, oh, it comes out the date that I watched it, which was that, like last week. And then, yeah, I had like nothing to do. So I just clicked the first episode and here we are.
How about you, Liz? Were you the same way?
No, I actually knew about the book. I tried to read it, but I think I faced the same issue as your brother. I couldn't get into it. And I think I was quite sad because I heard so many things about the book and I was so excited. And then I just could not for the life of me do it. And then I saw the trailer on Netflix and I was like, yes, visual medium.
I've never heard anyone else talk about this book series before, but was it something that people were talking a lot about in book circles? Like, how well known is the book?
I think Cixin Liu, yeah, I think he's the first ever Asian to win a Hugo Award. Is it called Hugo?
He's like,
it was like a big, big series. And then when it was translated from Chinese into English, it was like massive. And obviously, like, you know, China would have loved it because it's like, whoa, something that China made themselves that's now like globally recognized and like genuinely beloved by a lot of people. I actually heard of, so I knew of this book series before I knew about the book because they had named the science fiction theory based on the second book. The second book is called The Dark Forest Theory. The Dark Forest Theory is like its own thing, but it's named after the book. And I knew about the theory first before I read of the book, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know it was named after the book. That's actually crazy.
Wait, let me check that. It is. Okay, that's what Wikipedia tells me. The hypothesis derives its name from Liu Cixin's 2008 novel, although the concept predates the novel. Never mind.
Oh, okay.
But they named it after him.
That's so impressive.
Yeah, that is.
Especially since he studied, like, didn't he study science? Like, he must have, based on the way he writes.
I thought he was a computer scientist before that. I read that apparently he was a computer scientist.
Computer engineer.
Yeah.
It goes to show how well researched this like show was and like the books were, because I mean we watched, like all of us here have seen it, and we all only have good things to say about the way it was written, which is kind of crazy from a Netflix show, because I feel like Netflix has historically maybe not been the best at making Americanized shows about, like, I don't mean like the Korean drama part of Netflix, I'm thinking of like the Western side of Netflix that created this show. Like, it's kind of interesting that they've actually went and hired people who could speak Mandarin.
Yeah.
When I saw the trailer, I think I must have not paid attention to it enough, because I frankly thought I was going into an English-speaking show. And then the first scene is just full-on Mandarin, and not even, like, shitty Mandarin. It's, like, really decent Mandarin. And I was like, what show have I just opened? Did we click on the wrong thing?
I literally had the same experience as well. Like, I like backed out because I was like, oh no, I must have clicked on like some random show. And then it was not a random show.
Yeah.
The first episode and like the start where the thing happened, I was like, oh my God, like what is this show that I clicked into? Because it was like showing full like his face.
It was so gory. Yeah, I will say for listeners, the first couple scenes are super gory.
The heads up is that it is quite a dark series. I mean, like, even getting up to, like, episode 6, it doesn't get lighter. So I think just knowing that maybe it's not going to be the most, like, Sunshines and Rainbows series going into. But it's fun. It's really fun because it's a mystery. You're kind of trying to solve this mystery while you're watching it in your own way.
I guess going back to the, like, first impressions, my last Netflix series was Avatar. So I was expecting something of that caliber.
I liked Avatar.
Whoa, okay. No, but I was expecting the budget to be around what Avatar was and the acting level and the writing. And then when I watched like the first episode, it became very clear immediately that this was a way higher budget because the acting is just way better. The cinematography, the set pieces, like the quality was so tangible, and I was so surprised that Netflix had made a good quality series. Like, I was so shocked. You're listening to Asian Pop Nation on Sin, where we've taken you on a bit of a journey with those last three songs. First up, we played Singaporean artist Regina Song with her very peppy Y2K-inspired pop rock track Discord. After that, we played a new song from local artist Jackie. This one is called I Don't F With The Flakes. And finally, a wonderfully creepy track by K-pop girl group Artemis, consisting of members from Luna. That was the song Birth, which is from their upcoming debut EP. I really wanted to play that track tonight because we're covering a show that has a generous amount of cosmic horror in it, namely the new Netflix series Three Body Problem. Last segment, we gave some background on the show and our own expectations of it going in. In this next segment, we get into the real meat of the discussion, mostly focusing on the show's depiction of Cultural Revolution era China, and also who we think the standouts are from the cast. The first two episodes of Three Body Problem were directed by a Hong Kong filmmaker, as opposed to like a TV director. So I think it was more cinematic. And I think also having a Hong Kong director made those scenes set in Chinese much better, because the director would have been able to work with the Chinese actors.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, we were talking about this before, but I feel like the series being set in two different eras of like, one's in like Cultural Revolution China, but then the other one's in like modern day London. I feel like the historical elements of China was much more interesting. And I, in my opinion, more like engaging for us. Like, I just feel like the acting was really on point there, and everyone's felt like really like realistic with how they portray China then.
Yeah, the author is around the same age as my dad. I wasn't expecting it to align so closely to my parents' descriptions of what the Cultural Revolution was like. You can tell it was written by someone who went through the Cultural Revolution because it was a very unique psychological hellscape. And he captures it perfectly in his story, I think. Also, my dad went to the same uni where that first extremely brutal first scene is set. He studied physics there as well. So oh my God. I was like, this feels very personal to me. And the whole like people being sent to like laboratories in Inner Mongolia is also accurate, because my dad, he's been like, oh yeah, I used to have this friend at uni. Anyway, I haven't for 20 years because he disappeared off to Inner Mongolia. Like, it's a thing that happens. They send people there and they never get heard back from again. So there's all these little things that I was like,
wait a minute, Tracy, you're the main character of this TV show, aren't you?
It feels very targeted towards me specifically.
I feel like a lot of like people like you would relate to the show as well, especially having parents that grew up during that Cultural Revolution. So that's
the Cultural Revolution was like my screwed up version of bedtime stories. Like, oh, it feels more like an intimate psychological horror because it scared the heck out of me as a kid whenever they talked to me about it. Like, they talked about like struggle sessions and stuff, like watching them as children, like that happened. Also, my grandparents both got sent to labor camps, so seeing a labor camp defected, just like, that's them. I saw this discussion thread that was like, there's this scene in one of the first episodes where they talk about the political implications of firing things into the sun, and it gets shot down because Mao is the sun, like symbolically. Yeah. And I remember seeing a discussion on like Reddit or somewhere where they were like, that didn't really make sense to me. Like, that seems a bit unrealistic. But I'm like, no, that would have happened. Like,
yeah.
Grandma got sent to labor camp because she was like, we decorate everything with Mao's face. We should put his face on our ash urns as well. And that symbolically means that you want Mao to die. So that's why she got sent to a labor camp. Like, she didn't even commit any crimes. She just was like, smart aleck, bad joke. So, like, that shit happened. That's why I thought the first two episodes were like so excellent, because they were so close to like my own family's personal history.
That's really cool. I mean, I think one of the reasons I really liked the show was, you know, because of how, I guess, realistic it is. You want to research this stuff. You want to look at it and go, oh my God, I did not know that. I'm going to go Google what happened actually. Like, is that real? And I feel like that's forcing people to learn history, like history about an Asian country. Like, for a platform that predominantly like reaches out to, you know, Americans, your main Western audiences, having them be put in a situation where they might want to research like China's history, that I think that's phenomenal. Like, I think that's such a good thing.
I was so gobsmacked as I was watching the thing, because this isn't an Asian American story. We've had a lot of Asian American stories in the past few years. This is a Chinese story. Like, and I can't think of the last time I saw an adaptation, like a Western adaptation of a Chinese story. I actually can't think of it. Like, I guess we had Crazy Rich Asians. That's a Singaporean story, but that's a very surface level, barely Singaporean feeling story. Whereas this story still feels so Chinese to me. Yeah, I really liked that.
Good work, Netflix. We like this.
We like this.
What do we think about the cast?
Yeah, the cast. First of all, Benny Wong, Benedict Wong. Accent.
In it, bro.
Wonderful. It's wonderful. He's a Mancunian, which means he's from Manchester, which means he has this lovely, just very unique accent that you don't get to hear enough. So much so that Lee didn't know he was British.
No, dude. Neither did I.
There we go.
I literally saw him in the trailer and I was like, this is going to be an American show.
What?
Wait, that is exactly why. In the Marvel thing. He's Mr. Marvel Magic. Thing?
Magic Mike.
Doctor Strange.
Oh, Doctor Strange. Okay. I first saw him in the IT Crowd, which is a British sitcom, so I think that's why I knew. But he's so good. And also, prior to him being cast in the Netflix series, people sort of headcanoned him as the character from the books.
Oh, really?
Like, he was like a popular like fan cast for the character of Dasha. Any other standouts?
I feel like Jin's actress was really cool, just because she's one of the main cast, for people that don't know what's happening. Because I was watching it today, I was looking her up, because I was like, have I seen her anywhere? And this is one of two shows that she's listed on.
Yes.
On Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. It's actually crazy, because I feel like none of the cast seems to be very well known.
Yeah, very fresh faces, definitely.
Yeah, they actually did do like big casting calls. They specifically cast fresh faces for this. Like Xin Zheng, who plays young Ye Wenjie and is so good in that role. Mm-hmm. She literally is just like fresh out of drama school. Like, they cast really like inexperienced, like, but people who hadn't been given a chance before for this massive thing, and I really respect that. Yeah, but Jin Chung, her character is cool because she is New Zealand Chinese. And I know so many New Zealand Chinese people in like my personal life, because they always end up coming over to Melbourne, but
same.
I've never seen them on screen, like playing themselves, like just a New Zealand Chinese person. I'm happy they all got to keep their original accents, is all I'm saying.
True. There's like such a wide diversity of like accents and like characters, which is, you have American people. Like, there's a guy with an American accent.
Yeah, you got a bit of everything. You also have Liam Cunningham, best known as Davos from Game of Thrones in the series. And he has a lot of scenes with Benedict Wong. And they both have the most delectable accents. It's absolutely wonderful. Benedict Wong, Mancunian. And then Sir Davos, just like thick Irish accent. It's the best thing ever. Yeah, I also want to shout out to Xin Zheng, who, as I said, played young Ye Wenjie. She is so phenomenal. I just love her, the way she stares at things with such determination. This is like literally her first on-screen role. Like, what the heck? Why is she so good? And just in general, yeah, this is a really, really diverse cast. Like, so much so that there are multiple scenes where you have two characters talking and they're both people of color. And it felt like, to me, like fulfilling some Asian version of the Bechdel test, whenever you had like Rosalind Chow and Benedict Wong together in a room just talking. Those last three songs were Valentine by Weinstein, No Jam by Milena, and finally Don't by MGFF. You're listening to Asian Pop Nation, Sin's resident Asian pop music and pop culture show. Tonight we're discussing the new sci-fi series, Three Body Problem, which is based on the Remembrance of Earth's Past trilogy by Liu Cixin. We've spent the last two segments saying a lot of positive things about it. Coming up next is the last segment on this topic. We discuss some of the discourse surrounding this new adaptation and some changes from the book series that we didn't quite agree with. I guess that brings us to something that is a bit controversial, and that is the changing of the story's setting. the book series that's based off, the main characters are mostly Chinese, except for Mike Evans, who is eternally American. And in this Netflix adaptation, they've moved that setting to the UK. So the modern timeline is in the UK. Well, some characters have been whitewashed. They haven't just replaced them all with white people, like that one movie about the MIT poker ring thing. They've replaced them with an extremely diverse cast. Do you think they were justified in changing the setting to the UK? Do you think they could have pulled this series off just keeping it as is, like set in China in the modern day as well? Or, alternatively, setting it in an English-speaking place, but having all of them be like diasporic Asians?
Ethan, you've read the books, so I guess what do you think about this change?
I think we had a conversation about it just before, because obviously it was a very intentional change to make it set in London in an English-speaking cast. But they've also kept certain characters as Chinese or to set it in China. So, for example, Ye Wenjie and the Cultural Revolution. So we were talking before about like how the Chinese netizens are reacting to that and how like their perception of it is more like, I suppose, a bit confused about why they've kept certain elements of it Chinese, but then kept other parts of it. Like for instance, like the idea of like, oh, all the Chinese characters are like the evil characters, whereas like all the heroes are like Western characters from like London and stuff. I don't know. We were having a conversation about this before. Like, I'm mostly indifferent to them changing it to a Western setting. Like, that's fair enough if it's a Western adaptation. As I was saying before, I was just a bit confused why they also decided to keep some elements of it within China. And Tracy had a very good answer for that.
I will say that the whole, like, oh, they made all the bad guys Chinese and the good guys non-Chinese is like an oversimplification. Because, like, even in the modern day, you have, like, Jin Sheng, who is explicitly Chinese, like, in the series. And you also have Benedict Wong's character, who is also Asian. Like, you have these good characters on the good side who are Chinese as well. I think it's just, anyway, I think they had to keep the Cultural Revolution stuff in. I think the character of Ye Wenjie, this is not going to make sense if you haven't watched the series, but it's also not much of a spoiler. But Ye Wenjie, the character, is so nihilistic. She genuinely believes that, like, humankind is, like, doomed and we cannot save ourselves. And I think that is something that comes out of living through the Cultural Revolution. Like, if they said it in the UK and they wanted to have it all be, like, British people, and they tried to come up with an analogous sort of, like, harrowing ordeal that would make someone nihilistic, I don't think it would be as effective. I think the Cultural Revolution is extremely effective when presented on screen because of how psychological that whole ordeal was.
Yeah, because I do agree with that. Like, I obviously understand, like, how important that historical period was for Ye Wenjie and for, like, the events to unfold. But I also think, like, so in Three Body Problem, a lot of the themes are around, like, science and religion and, like, how that plays into each other. And I think that ties better with the Cultural Revolution.
Yeah.
Because it's about, like, Chinese physicists, like, kind of questioning, like, science and religion and, like, do you believe in, like, you know, there's even a cult in this, in the Three Body Problem and how they talk about, like, their lord or that sort of stuff, or, like, how they believe in, you know, a quote-unquote god that is real to them and that sort of stuff. So I feel like that ties in a lot better in a Chinese setting as a whole, whereas in the Netflix adaptation, it's a bit haphazard, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a bit disconnected.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'll say, like, the one thing I didn't like about the change of characters, and this is nothing to do with, like, the change of settings or whatever. For some reason, they chose to make the characters all related to each other. Like, they're all just in one
group.
I really didn't like that.
Yeah.
I thought that was really annoying.
Why is the whole Oxford Five this weird polycule?
Yeah, that was really weird to me. That was a very Western, like, adaptation. Because in the books, they're all, like, separate characters that have different stories that rarely intersect with each other. Like, the main characters are, like, completely different people that have no overlap with each other. So the idea of the trilogy is, like, it's a sociological novel. Like, if anyone's ever read, like, The Foundation by Asimov, or, like, even Game of Thrones, it's, like, a very sociological book in that it's, like, different characters within the world who play different themes. And sometimes they intersect with each other, but it adds to, like, this narrative of, like, what the world is like. And I feel like the producers should have known this, because they are the Game of Thrones people, and I don't understand why they chose to make it like, hey, all these people are just in one friend group. They're all just like the chosen ones. They're like the Avengers or something. I thought that was really weird. I thought the books handled it better because they all had, like, they were all completely separate from one each other. And sometimes it was literally, like, generations apart.
I think they just wanted them to hang out in the same house together.
I think it was for convenience of production.
Yeah, I think that too.
I mean, they kind of don't really. I feel like the only reason they're still friends is just because they were friends in uni. Mm-hmm. Like, these people still seem to be, like, in each other's lives, but in the same way that, like, people in their, like, 30s are in their uni friends' lives. Once in a while you go out for drinks, but you're not, like, always together. And mm-hmm. I feel like that's the same energy for them. The only reason they're, like, together now is because of a really bad tragedy that happens in the first episode.
Yeah, that's true. They have become distant. One of them has become a snack mogul. One of them has become a teacher.
I feel like that's the only reason that they're together. So I think they did a decent job in bringing them together like that.
Yeah. I guess they do spend most of the rest of the series, like, joined at the hip. But if you're all traumatized in the same way, I guess you would be kind of spending a lot of time with each other.
Mm.
In terms of other quibbles I had with the show,
mm-hmm.
whenever a non-Chinese character, someone who obviously couldn't speak Chinese, spoke Chinese, I know.
Like Mike Evans.
Like Mike Evans! Stop!
His Mandarin wasn't bad, though. That was the really upsetting part.
Yes, sometimes it was actually kind of decent, but that's also because they cut away from him, so for all we know, it could have been ADR. Like,
oh no, I fully thought they'd replaced him with a man who could speak Chinese.
Because, like, when they show his face talking, it's, like, bad, but then when they show, like, another character's face while he's talking, it's, like, suddenly really good.
Yeah, I also got that. I couldn't understand him when I was looking at his face, but then when he was off-screen speaking, I was like, oh my god, this guy speaks Chinese.
There's this awkward moment where Rosalind Chow says one line in Chinese, and I'm like, you haven't spoken Chinese for 40 years.
Yeah.
Even though your younger self is fluent in Chinese. Oh, my immersion. Oh, no. I will definitely try to finish this series just because I was so impressed. Like, when it's good, it's really good. And I think it's something that's really unique, as I said. Like, a Chinese story that still has a lot of its Chinese elements retained is something that's pretty rare.
Mm. Yeah, near the end of the series, I think they foreshadow a lot of plot from the third book, which I totally didn't go on Wikipedia and just read the plot. But though it's very, like, as soon as I finished it, it was 3 a.m. Oh my god, I had to know more. So I just, like, read all the plot off Wikipedia, and then I read, like, reviews and, like, other people's articles about, like, the actual books and stuff. And it was really interesting. And then that made me, like, want to rewatch Interstellar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then I watched The Martian. And then I was like, oh, okay,
Benedict Wong marathon.
Yeah, literally.
I will probably also go on a Benedict Wong marathon after this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in general, this series does some things that are really, really well, and in a way that we haven't really seen from Western adaptations. So would definitely recommend it for anyone who's interested in something a bit more like on the thriller side, on the more drama side, as opposed to the comfort watching side of Netflix. Thus concludes Asian Pop Nation's review of Three Body Problem Season 1. We all really enjoyed this series, and I would definitely recommend the first 5 episodes to anyone who's in the mood for a fast-paced sci-fi thriller. Right now on Asian Pop Nation, we're about halfway through tonight's installment of the show. Next up, we're going to shift our focus to another Netflix show, this time their recent live-action adaptation of Avatar: The Last Airbender. So a couple weeks ago, me and Leisha talked about the new Avatar Netflix adaptation. That's Avatar: The Last Airbender, not Avatar Blue People, James Cameron version. At that time, I think both me and Leisha had watched like 2 episodes. Leisha, she didn't like this new Netflix adaptation. I was like, I can take it or leave it. This week, we have Liz in the virtual studio. And Liz is actually an Avatar Netflix enthusiast. And
those are loose words. Let's not use those words to describe me.
She doesn't hate the Avatar Netflix. And so in the spirit of giving people a fair go, the Australian value of giving things a fair go, let's have Liz explain why she likes Avatar. So you've watched the whole series?
Yeah,
the whole season?
Yeah, yeah. I watched it with my partner, so we... he's never seen Avatar full stop. So
have you seen Avatar?
Yeah, I finished Korra as well. I know, like, pretty much everything.
Oh, wait, except did you the watch comics. The cartoon after the live action? Or had you watched the cartoon before watching the live action?
Oh, like, way before. Oh, way, okay. way before.
Oh,
a lot of nice. People in my diploma when I was in Singapore really liked Korra because she's like our queer queen.
Mm.
Gay legend. Basically, so me and like my partner, we watched the first season to like the live action, and he liked it so much. He was like, Liz, can we please watch season two and then the next seasons in the cartoon format? So I have just refinished watching Avatar, all of them again.
Damn.
And it was great this time around too. I wasn't expecting to like it again because, you know, like when you watch it when you're the age that it's made for, that enjoying it is one thing,
mm-hmm.
but at the ripe old age of 24 still looking back and watching Aang, we'll discount Korra because Korra was made for a quote-unquote adult, like older audience,
yeah.
but still enjoying Aang in the way that I think we did was beyond me. Like that's a testament to how good Avatar fares and like the big scene of cartoons and TV shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nah, agreed. A lot of the agreed. Stuff you watch when you're 8 is complete toss when you rewatch it. But when you rewatch something and you're like, wow, I didn't notice how actually good this was, it's like the greatest feeling ever.
That's probably why I liked it so much. Because I was like, I think the fact that it got people into watching the original series is actually something that I really appreciate in live action TV shows. A lot of them are very bad, but I think this is one of the better live action adaptations we've seen. I mean, the fact that they only hired First Nationers for the Water Tribe was like
yeah.
a big deal. The fact that they had really diverse casting compared to the movie, which God forbid was a disaster.
Oh my God.
What movie, huh?
That's true.
What are you talking about?
That's true. I made a mistake.
When I watched the movie, like I watched the first half hour of the movie, I was just in shock. Why are all these people white? Because this story is very, it basically is Xiyouji. It's basically like Journey to the West, kind of.
Yeah. Mm.
Which is based on Buddhism, like the story of Buddhism. So having all these people, like, and also it's based on Kung Fu, like Chinese Kung Fu. So to have, like, why are all these white people doing Kung Fu? It was so weird to me. Like, it felt extremely wrong to me. So the Netflix series, the casting, they definitely did a good job. Everyone is, like, Asian or, like, First Nations or, like, ethnically ambiguous. And I think that actually adds to the whole visual world building.
Yeah. I saw that they tried to add the My Cabbages Man. And I don't remember how I felt about it, but I just remember being like, huh, that happened.
Apparently he's very iconic.
He is.
We'll always bring him up out of nowhere.
Yeah, he'll just pop up like every, in the cartoon at least, pop up every season and like something will happen to his cabbage cart. And then he would be like, my cabbages.
Yeah. That's a cute nod to the fan. I wanted to ask Liz, were there any, like, actors or characters who you thought would, like, really stand out in this Netflix adaptation?
Honestly, I think out of all of them, the main three, I think Azula and her three were awful. Like, they just seemed really shitty the entire time, and they didn't really seem like... Like, Azula is supposed to be, like, very sure of herself, kind of scary. And I feel like the direction they chose, or at least the direction that she seems to have gone in, is like very insecure, mean girl.
Right.
I liked, I think his name is Ozai. Like, I liked Fire Lord Ozai. I liked his
acting. Oh, Daniel Day-Kim?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, he's Daniel Day-Kim. He has such like a face made for live action cartoon.
I think he's just, also a voice actor.
Yeah, he's just the gravitas he has.
Yeah.
Overpowers whatever script they give him. Like, it could be the worst script in the world and he could still pull it off. I feel like Benedict Wong is also like an actor who could do, like, pull off whatever script they gave him. He's like that caliber actor.
That's true. I think I had really mixed feelings about the guy who played Uncle Iroh, because he's also in Kim's Convenience.
Mm.
So, like, on one end, I think he, because I know that there's been a lot of discourse about how he doesn't really suit the role, but I kind of concur, because I feel like he does, because he gives, like, kind of kooky uncle vibes.
Mm-hmm. But I at really the same liked time. Him.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But at the same time, the reason I say I have mixed feelings is because I think I've only really seen Kim's Convenience through TikTok, but all the clips I see of him, I can't seem to kind of unlatch that image from him as Iroh.
Okay, as someone who hasn't seen Kim's Convenience, I really liked him as Iroh. He just has a very kind face. So I think it's very nice to be like the fight. Like, Zuko is obviously like a hot-headed teenage Hot Topic kid. So him being, like, paired up with this very kind-hearted, round-faced, round-eyed man is a very good dynamic to me. Like, very, like, cartoon, like, pairing two completely different characters with each other. I like that juxtaposition.
Let's talk about the movie that should not be named. They were doing a side-by-side comparison of Princess Yeo's wig, and, like, back then, the wig looked way better than now, which was, like, interesting, I thought. And, yeah, just the costume design, which I saw, was, like, Azula's, like, costume. It was, like, it looked, like, super bulky and, like, cardboard. And also, like, straight-up cosplay is my opinion. But, yeah.
I guess the reason it looks so cosplay is because it looks very much like the animated characters' costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think was what they were very much going for. But I think because of their, I guess, lack of flexibility in terms of, like, how characters looked, you kind of lose out in the, it looks so unrealistic.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think fans get a bit, they understand and be disappointed when a series, an adaptation doesn't match up with what they imagined in their heads. And this is true of Three Body Problem as well, because I was so surprised. I went on, like, fan forums and searched up Three Body Problem, and it was just full of people complaining about the series. They were like, this is complete trash. They treat the audience like they're dumb. All these characters are dumb. Their motivations don't make sense. And I was, I enjoyed it. I think it was really cool how they had it. I think it was a really cool series. And all these people are, like, ripping it apart because they're seeing the book version they have in their heads and comparing it to the movie. Comparing it to the Netflix series, whereas I'm comparing it to, like, Avatar. But anyway, yeah.
I mean, like, it was, I think something that I'm really excited regarding the Avatar series is actually seeing how, because in the animated show, the Fire Lord is, like, super pro Azula. Like, he's like, Azula should have been my, like, is my main bitch. She's like my favorite girly, and, like, we hate Zuko. In this house. In this house, Zuko is nothing but a weak, weak boy who is like his weak, weak mother. And we don't like that. But then in the, it was really interesting to see that in the live action, they chose to take it in a completely different path. He was somehow supportive of Zuko. Like, there was an underlying respect for the fact that, kind of, because, like, if you, like, in the live action, you kind of see that, like, when he finds the Avatar, you see, like, a bit of respect from the Fire Lord. The Fire Lord seems a lot less like, oh, Azula, you know, you're cooler than him. And it, instead, we see Azula kind of fighting for recognition rather than having it already.
Oh, that's so interesting. So
I think it would be really interesting to see how that goes in the next, because I feel like there's, the energy I'm getting is that it'll be a very different relationship in the Fire Nation. And I really want to see how that plays out.
Me too. The Fire Nation, I didn't see much of them, but they're very interesting to me because of how dramatic they are. They're just so emo and so messed up. I love it. Thank you for listening to this Netflix edition of Asian Pop Nation Nonsense. We are not sponsored by Netflix. We just happen to have access to it. Welcome or welcome back to Asian Pop Nation on Sin. We just played Bandage by Ayumu Imazu, Surfin by TAN, and finally Sidestep by Satoko Shibata, a very satisfying syllabant song name and artist name combination. All three of those tracks are very upbeat and very danceable. Hopefully they cheered you up on a dreary Tuesday night. I'm pre-recording this on Monday and it is raining so hard right now. Coming up next is our very last proper talk segment for tonight. In this one, I interview Ethan about his experience at the recent ITZY concert in Melbourne.
So last Tuesday, normally when ABN would have our team meetings, I was away watching ITZY, who is a K-pop girl group that we all very much enjoy because they are really great dancers and really great performers. And watching them at Margaret Court Arena was very, very special. So me and my friends rocked up about like 30 minutes before the concert starts. We went in, we lined up. There was quite a big line, but it moved quite fast and they did the little security checks and stuff. On the other side at the same time, there was also the Joker Xue concert, who I assume is some Chinese singer.
I never knew that concerts could happen at Margaret Court Arena at the same time. That's kind of crazy to me. How full was your half of the Margaret Court Arena then?
It was very big. I definitely think the ITZY side was way more like busy. I think they sold out the stadium because it looked really packed. But the vibe was really good and everyone was obviously a big fan. I think this is the first time I've been to a JYP concert, so it was new for me in terms of like the JYP-isms. Like when they show like the video of all them groups at the start, I thought that was really interesting and everyone cheered for the different things.
Yeah, the JYP Nation marketing video.
It's really interesting. There were like so many groups now that I don't even recognize or have never heard before. And yeah, as well, like when you have like the little encore section at the end and they get you to like, they have like the audience dance bit where they film different audience members and they dance to it.
Oh, they do that at ITZY as well.
Yeah, so when they went backstage and they got us to sing the lyrics to Boys Like You, I guess they didn't want to perform that song, but they made us sing it. Also, I do think it's because Leah wasn't there. Leah, who's the fifth member, who is also the most fluent English speaker. I think she has most of the lines in Boys Like You anyway. So it's a bit weird if she wasn't there to sing it. So I guess they just got the audience to sing it. But it was fun. It was a cute little song. I think a lot of the songs that we've talked about in the past that we aren't as keen on, like say like Cake or Sneakers, they performed it in the concert and it was a lot of fun as well, because I think it was a bit like, you know, just a bit of fun.
I think a lot of songs, when you're alone by yourself in your room and you're listening to it by yourself, you might think this is not the greatest song in the world, but when it's being played in a huge stadium full of people singing along, you're like, this is the best thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, exactly.
No, actually, I've come around to Cake.
Yeah, Cake is a lot better than I give it credit for. Like, it actually has, like, singing, like, chorus, like, a melodic chorus in it as well.
I mostly just really like the choreo. And when I was learning the choreo, I eventually ended up liking it. You were up on the side. You had a really close view of ITZY.
Yeah, so we bought A-reserve tickets because I learned my lesson from Sejong. And I was like, no, I'm buying good tickets from now on. I'm not buying, like, the bottom tier tickets.
Yes.
But yeah, so we bought A-reserve, which I think was like the second or third most like expensive tier, besides like VIP, obviously. And yeah, I thought the crowd was very interesting because no one was really like dancing or singing along. Like they were all vibing and stuff, but a lot of them were just like standing up and watching or like recording. And I think our running theory is that everyone who bought the tickets are old enough to afford them, but also like way too tired to like get hype. Because it's also like a Tuesday night and everyone would just come back from work. So like some of the people that we saw around us were, you know, obviously like in the mid, late 20s, early 30s or whatever. And they were just on their phone watching. Oh, there were a lot of old people as well. I was really surprised. Like a lot of like old white people. I assume they're there for like their kids or something. But they seem like they were.
How old are we talking?
Like grandparents' age.
What?
So I was like, whoa, this is so interesting. What an interesting demographic.
Who is indoctrinating the old white people into K-pop? It's a mystery.
Into ITZY as well, which is like a very like high energy.
You should have interviewed them.
Yeah, I probably should have. But yeah, it was really strange. And then me and my friends were like vibing the whole time, dancing and jumping and, you know, singing along and that sort of stuff. Right behind us, there was a woman sitting. I think it was the accessibility seating. I was a bit worried that we were like blocking her way or something. So I did keep checking just to make sure that we weren't, you know, in our way or something like that. But no, it seemed fine. And then at the end of the concert, she like came up to us and she was like, oh my God, you guys were so much fun. We got so much energy from the concert from you guys. Aww. And we had so much fun. I was like, oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
That's adorable.
And then I felt really good. It gave me like a little dancer moment there when I'm like, damn, I'm like backup dancer. Yeah.
That's very nice, because the only thing I saw online about this concert after it happened was people complaining about how bad the crowd was.
Oh, really? From who?
Yeah. Just like random people on the internet being like, the ITZY concert in Melbourne, the crowd sucks. And I'm like, I just saw Ethan's videos from it. Like, ITZY looked great.
But... Oh, no, it seemed was great. I think the crowd was just a bit...
Because it was Tuesday. That makes way more sense.
I think it was fine. Yeah, that too. And it was also, like, not quite long holiday, long weekend holiday just yet. So maybe that's why. But, like, I didn't think the crowd was bad or anything. Maybe a little low energy on, like, my section. But, like, they were, like, all respectful and we all had fun. So I don't have any issues there.
In terms of ITZY, what were your highlights, you reckon? Did they do any cute things, like, say, they went to the Yarra River and ate steak?
Yeah, they did, like, Aussie, 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 that sort of stuff. Or, like, gnaw.
Oh, my God. Did they all gnaw at you?
I think they did. I don't know. No. It just feels like something that a K-pop idol do in Australia. But yeah, it was fun. I think I still really like Rujin. She's so cool.
It's very understandable.
But also, like, I think Yeji and Chaerung are really underrated. Like, I saw a lot of people that I was talking to and they were like, yeah, we definitely agree. Like, they're really good performers on stage. I feel like Chaerung should be the center of ITZY because I feel like she's such a strong center for the group. Like, she's really good, like, mix of everything. She's kind of like the Seulgi of ITZY, in my opinion, in terms of, like, she's really good at everything. She can sing, she can dance, she has, like, really good, like, stage performance.
Yeah, her presence has improved so much since her music.
Yeah, and she's, like, such a delightful person.
Yeah, she is. Oh, that's so nice. I think ITZY are a very evenly matched group.
Yeah, like, that's, yeah.
All of them are, like, really talented.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, like, definitely a really good concert, very hype. The music was really good as well. When you hear it, like, really loud, songs like Untouchable or, like, even Born to Be was, like, really hype in a stadium. I think it was a bit too loud towards the second half because I got deaf. Couldn't hear for a long time. I was like, is it just me or is everyone's, like, voices really, like, high-pitched now? Because, like, even the members or the songs were, like, quite high-pitched. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I think I'm going deaf. So that was scary. But the music... was really good. I had a lot of fun.
Were there any specific songs that stood out as just like this song goes off live?
I think Untouchable was the one that we were all hyped for. They didn't perform Muff in the Morning, which really sucked because we love that song. I love that song. They also didn't play Icy, which really is not good because Icy is the best and we all love Icy.
Oh, isn't that like their like
one of their most popular songs? Yeah.
Yeah, that's like one of their signature songs.
So they did Wannabe, obviously, but then they did Dala Dala as in like the final encore song, which I thought was really weird. Like I thought you would like feature Dala Dala. Like I thought the idea was Dala Dala, Icy and Wannabe were like the perfect trio.
I think they're getting to that point, actually. They got to this point long ago, but they have so many songs which were really successful that they can not play one of them, and it's not, like, the worst thing ever.
Yeah, that's true. And they did do a lot of, like, B-sides as well, which I was really happy with.
Did they play Mr. Vampire?
Yeah, of course they did. Yes! Mr. Vampire.
I love Mr. Vampire.
So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. If they come back, if they bring Leah, like they said, they promised they would. Like they said they would. Let's hope so.
Those last three songs were Best Ever by Wendy from Red Velvet, Ride It Out by Kim Namjoo from A-Pink, and finally I'll Be Mine by Filipino funk band Flu featuring Thai artist Namcha. And with that, we've unfortunately reached the end of the show for tonight. Thank you so much for joining Asian Pop Nation. Our team tonight was Ethan, Liz, Lee, and me, Tracy. We talked through a few series we've been watching, most notably Three Body Problem, which we yapped about for half an hour because we all really liked that series. We also talked about the new Avatar The Last Airbender live-action adaptation, which Liz enjoyed. And lastly, we ended the show with a little recap of ITZY's recent concert in Melbourne, which Ethan attended. As is Asian Pop Nation tradition, we're going to play you out on a couple of lovely, comforting ballads. This next track is Garbage Baby by Yoga Lin, and the song after that will be Anything You Ask by Serral. This is Tracy from Asian Pop Nation signing off for tonight. Hope you have a good night, everyone.